Okay, we are now up to our second topic in our little brief introduction to Hilchos Shemitah. And the topic here is the one about the Heter Mechira. This will take us the next three classes to finish the series, three different shiurim, all combining to give us a full picture of the story of the Heter Mechira. Heter Mechira, as all of you undoubtedly know, is one of, if not the greatest halakhic controversies of the 20th century. Now spilling into the 21st century. It is impossible to overstate how controversial this has been, and it is also impossible to be honest without acknowledging that a certain degree, perhaps even large degree, of the current machlokes and tension is largely political and not so much halachic. That's a reality which I see no point other than acknowledging. However, it's also a reality which we will not be addressing. This is a shiur about halacha, not about politics, and we will leave the politics, so to speak, at the door. However, what I would like to discuss is the fact that even without, in an absence of all politics, the Heter Mechira is quite controversial. There are strong arguments in defense or advocating for the Heter, but there are strong arguments, as we will see, against the Heter, none of which have to do with who's a bigger Zionist than who. And I think it's important for us to have that perspective. Let me give you a little bit of history, as well as a breakdown in how we will address the topic over the next 3 weeks. The Heter was first propounded or first suggested in 1889, which was in advance of the first Shemitah after the Shivat Zion, after the modern return to the land of Israel. There was dire economic situations. The people living in Israel, the old Yishuv, did not think that they would survive if they stopped farming for the year. And the Shaila was sent to Europe whether there was a way out, whether there was this type of a Heter Mechira. At the time, there were three main Gedolim who signed on to the Heter. Their names may be, at least two of them may be familiar to you. The two of the more well-known ones, Rabbi Shua Mikutna, some of his writings we will actually see inside tonight. Also, Rav Shmuel Maliver, one of the great leaders of the early religious Zionist movement, the great Talmud Chacham. And a third Talmud Chacham, who I am otherwise not as familiar with, not as well-known, Rav Shmuel Zanvil Klapfish of Warsaw. These three Gedolei Torah proposed or authored this initial Heter, and in fact they received the Haskama from arguably the Gadol Hador, or certainly one of, and that was Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector. And not only did the three of them and then Rav Yitzchak Elchanan agree with the Heter, but others as well, notably including, for example, Rav Yosef Engel, also who wrote a long essay defending the Heter. In more recent times this debate has continued, but that was the original group of Matirim. Now, it's interesting to note that even though the Heter nowadays is most closely identified and associated with Rav Kook, and we'll see in a moment why that is, but it is worth noting that when Rav Kook was still in Europe, when this Heter was first proposed, he was not only not a proponent of it, in fact, along with his father-in-law, the great tzaddik known as Aderet, Rav Kook was against the Heter. It was only in 1910, after Rav Kook was already in Eretz Yisrael, perhaps seeing the matters firsthand with his own eyes, that he in fact changed his mind, and it was in that year that he published his magnum opus as far as Shemitah is concerned, and that is the Sefer Shabbat Ha'aretz, which is in a sense a commentary on the Rambam's laws of Hilchos Shemitah. In addition to the commentary on the Rambam, halacha by halacha, there's also a lengthy introduction, as well as an addendum in the back of the Sefer, where issues of the Heter are explicitly addressed and defended. Once Rav Kook came to Eretz Yisrael and changed his mind and actively embraced the Heter, that his dominant personality and standing, his enthusiastic proposal for the Heter, in the manner of speaking, Lemaisa, enthusiastically supporting it, not philosophically, as we'll see in a few moments. That is perhaps, aside from the politics, why it has become so associated with him. But it is certainly worth knowing that he is not the only, or even the first, of the great Gedolei Torah to support it. As I said, Yosef Engel, Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, Shua Mikutna, these are great, great first-rank A-League, A-level Gedolei Torah, and they were all in support of the heter, at least that technically it would work. The reason I hedge is because many of them, and perhaps most dramatically, Rav Kook himself, wrote numerously and in many places that fundamentally the heter mechira is bidyeved. It is far from ideal. I believe this is for two reasons. First of all, halachically, as we will see in tonight's and the next two shirim, there are major questions about heter. So anytime you have major, major questions about something, you're always nervous. Number two is more, I think, philosophically, and this is the more important point, perhaps, both in terms of those who are critical of the heter, and even such as Rav Kook, who accepted it, but did so, so to speak, swallowing a bitter pill, and that is because it is not just a technical loophole, but fundamentally, it essentially takes us completely out of what the purpose of Shemitah is. The purpose of Shemitah is not to be farming, to be focusing on spirituality, on Ruchnius, on learning Torah, etc., your Shemayim that year. This is not just a technicality and a heter, a kula, but it really runs against the spirit of Shemitah, which we know from Chazal is considered very, very important and tantamount with the successful settling of the land. So to avoid it, to avoid the brachos that are promised with it, is something which would make anybody uncomfortable. And in fact, it did make Rav Kook uncomfortable. He writes in at least one place that even though we have literature of his and halachic argumentation to study, like any other sugya, he's actually, he says, intentionally not revealing all of his reasons and all of his argumentation because he doesn't want to happen, that this has become set and unquestionable and something that will always be. Rav Kook's hope is that it would be reevaluated on a yearly, or should I say, annual basis, meaning every 7 years, and that perhaps he hoped time would come shortly where we would not have to rely on it anymore. Whether that time has come already or not is certainly an open question, but not a question that I feel equipped to answer, and not a question which we will address in this year. But that is why it is so controversial to this day, even though it has always been supported by Gedolim. It has also always been opposed by Gedolim. As we'll see tonight, the Netziv was an ardent in opposition of it, the Beis HaLevi, Rav David Karliner, a great posek, was against it. And again, in terms of contemporary consequence, perhaps most notable is the fact that the Chazon Ish was absolutely 100% against the heter in extreme ways, and that certainly has carried the day, certainly in contemporary times. So the battle lines, in a sense, I hate to use that term, are drawn. Major Gedolei Torah on both sides, and all sorts of politics and rhetoric as well. What I'd like to do is to focus on whether or not this really works halachically, and leave the politics for other people and other opportunities to discuss. One last bit of introduction about how we're going to break up the three shurim, and then we'll be ready to begin the actual substance of tonight's shir. What I'd like to do is break down the three shurim, this one big topic into three, and even then we won't cover everything, but I think we'll cover all the main issues, and that is the following. Number one, which is our topic for tonight, will be whether the heter is permissible or not. Perhaps the very heter, regardless of whether it would work or not, but perhaps to do it, to sell land of Israel to a non-Jew, perhaps that is usser, perhaps that's even more usser than working on Shemitah. And if that were the case, we certainly would not want to do such a thing. Obviously, those who support the heter believe it's not usser. What that debate is, we'll see tonight. Going to the next year, which we'll have in Mirtz Hashem next week, even assuming that it's not usser, our second question will be, okay, even if it's not usser, does it work? Is it effective? And by that I mean, does it work from a Hilchos Choshen Mishpat perspective, from a general commercial law perspective, civil law perspective? Is such a sale, which is so obviously, it would seem symbolic, so obviously a legal loophole, does that sale even work? Do we say that when the rabbi and the non-Jew meet and they give over these contracts, is the non-Jew really taking hold of the land? That will be our second question. What the arguments for and against, we'll have to see that week in 2 weeks. And finally, in 3 weeks, in the final segment of the shir, we will discuss, even assuming it's permissible, it's mutter to sell the land, even permissible from a civil law perspective, that it is now technically effective, namely the land, farm X or Y, is now entitled, owned by the non-Jew. The third and most final important question which I have to ask is, does this all help? The whole purpose of jumping through all these hoops will be to to say that there is no Kedushas Aretz, that there is no Chiyuv Shemitah on such land, and therefore you'd be able to work the land, and the produce from the land, in theory, would not have any Kedusha. Even in theory, one could take the position that it's mutter to sell the land, that the sale isn't effective from a civil law perspective, that the non-Jew still owes the land, but could disagree at the last moment and say, but it still doesn't help from a Hilchos Shemitah perspective, you're still obligated to keep Shemitah on that land. In order for someone to practically support the Tetzah Mechira and believe that it has any resonance and any effect, one has to make the positive assumption about all three of these different questions. Number one, it's mutter. Number two, the sale is effective from a commercial perspective. And number three, the sale helps from a Hilchos Zeroyim, a Shemitah perspective. If any one of those pieces are missing, the heter would not be sustainable. So with that introduction, let us move now to first part of the three-part series, and that is the first question to deal with tonight, whether it is permissible or not to sell the land of Israel. Why would it not be permissible to sell the land of Israel? Well, that is based on a discussion that the Gemara has. The Gemara in Masechta Avodah Zarah, it is commenting on a pasuk. I'm now reading from our source sheet, in Perek Zayin and Dvarim, Pasuk Beis, which speaks about our relationship with the non-Jews, especially after we come into Eretz Yisrael, and we have to wipe them out and settle the land ourselves. And the pasuk concludes with the following postscript, so to speak, Velo Sechanim. Now, the word Velo is easy enough to translate. The question is, what does Sechanim mean? And as we will see in a moment, the Gemara itself isn't sure, and suggests three different substantive translations or explanations in halachos which the Torah could be communicating. The context in Avodah Zarah is a Mishnah, which tells us that one is not allowed to sell something that is deemed mechubar lakarka, a plant or a tree or a bush or a flower which is still growing, it's still attached to the ground that you own. You're not allowed to sell to a non-Jew, at least not to an idolater. The Mishnah, however, tells us the rule, but does not tell us the rationale. Therefore, the Gemara asks, Menahani Mili, how do we know this? I'm on the second source, first line. Amar Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, the Amar Kra, the source is our Pasuk. Lo Sechanim, how does he translate that to mean? Lo Sitein Lahem Chaniya Bakarka. You shouldn't give this idolatrous non-Jew, you shouldn't give him or her holding or rest. But it doesn't just mean rest in a temporary sense, it means hold or foothold in the land. So even though you're not selling the non-Jew land, getting back to the Mishnah's original case, you're only selling them the plant, but we in halacha generally see that anything that's mechubar lakarka, still connected to the ground, has the halachic status, has the legal standing of real estate proper, of karka, and therefore if you sell them the plant while it's connected to the land, you are in violation of lo sitein lahem chaniya bakarka, you're giving them in essence ownership, resting place in the land. That is the explanation that the Gemara first offers for this halacha in the Mishnah. Now the Gemara asks, maybe that's not true. After all, we have another halacha which we thought came from this pasuk. Hailo sachanim yibay layhachi, ka'amar rachmana. We can't use this pasuk to teach us this law about real estate to non-Jews. It's needed for something else. Rather, lo sitein lahem chein, end of the second line. As a halacha, says the Gemara, that you're not allowed to give gratuitous compliments to this idolater. Without getting into all the details, this is a topic, perhaps a sensitive, a delicate one, which we're not getting into tonight, but suffice it to say that there are many qualifications for this prohibition, but at least in some circumstances, says the Gemara, one is not allowed to be complimentary for a non-Jew. In this case, says the Gemara, the basis of that is also the pasuk of Lo Sechanim. So how can we use the pasuk to teach us about selling land or even a plant to a non-Jew? So the Gemara answers, end of the second line, in Cain, if it would just be to teach us about the compliments, Le Makra Lo Sechunim. You would pronounce the word, you'd read the word Lo Sechunim, which the Gemara assumes etymologically would be more faithful to the idea of not complimenting. So why, in fact, is the pasuk lo sechanim, if that's the case? My lo sechanim, shma mina tarti. Oh, says the Gemara, a real chumrah. It's not one or the other, it's both. It's written ambiguously lo sechanim to refer to both. But yet the Gemara says perhaps a third one. Akati Mebaile, there's something else we really need the pasuk for. Hachi Amrachmanis, to teach us a different halacha. Lo sitin lehem matnas shel chinam. We're not supposed to give them, again, a gratuitous present. Again, for no reason, someone you have no prior or no future relationship with. It's not a question of building a relationship, a barter. You give me something today, I give you something tomorrow. But rather, I'm just giving an idolater, and I'm just giving him a present. So the Gemara says that's also prohibited from los achanim. The common denominator, by the way, that's not obvious, in all three of these, as the Rishonim, the Sefer Chinuch, the Meiri, others point out, is that we don't want people to get too cozy with such people because we're worried about fratrization and we're worried ultimately about intermarriage. We know there's many halachos like that. So los achanim could tell us that you shouldn't give these type of presents to non-Jews. If that's the case, says the Gemara, we don't have a source for these other halachos. But so too the Gemara dispels that and says, Imkain, if the pasuk was just to teach us about not giving presents, lema kra lo sechinim, it would have been read lo sechinim, which the Gemara assumes would have grammatically been more true to tell us about not giving these presents. So why, in fact, does it say lo sechanim, my lo sechanim? So the Gemara concludes with a big chumrah, shma mina kulhu. In fact, the reason that the word is pronounced lo sechanim is to teach us all three halachos, something that we don't usually find. One pasuk teaching us three halachos, but in fact, that's how we paskin. Three halachos, all three are asar mida araisa, all from the pasuk lo sechanim. Working backwards, that means you can't give a present for no reason, you can't give a compliment for no reason, and what's more relevant to us, apparently you're not supposed to give or sell land to a non-Jew. Lo sitim hamchania bakarka. In fact, that's how the Gemara concludes. Let's read it inside where I have it underlined. Tamen nan yahachi, we have a supporting braisa. Lo sechanim, that's how we read the pasuk. Lo sitim hamchania bakarka. Number one, it teaches us, don't give them that foothold in the land. Davrachar, second thing, lo sechanim, lo sitim hamchain. No gratuitous compliments. And davrachar, finally, a third halacha. Lo sechanim, lo sitim ham matnas chinam. Don't give them unnecessary or freebie type presents. As I alluded to, this exegesis, this drasha, is in fact codified in the halacha, the Rambam and Shulchan Aruch. If you take a look at your third source, you will see that the Rambam in fact quotes these three halachos as sources for the prohibition, examples of the prohibition of los achanim. The part that I have underlined is the part that is relevant for us, and in fact the formulation of the Rambam, as we'll see throughout the remainder of the shir, is very relevant. But here's where the Rambam quotes this first halacha in the Gemara. With Neima'in Mochem Lehem, why don't we sell them land in Eretz Yisrael? Shine Amar, the Lo Sechanim, meaning to say, Lo Siteim Lehem Chania Bakarka, you shouldn't give them this foothold in the land. And now the Rambam adds, he editorializes, Shim Lo Gia Lehem Karka, because if they don't have ownership over the land, Yeshivasan, Yeshivas Arayhi, maybe they'll be living in Eretz Yisrael at any given time, but it will be by definition temporary or impermanent. If they own the land, then they're not going anywhere. But if they're only renting, if they're only borrowing, if they're only squatting, so as bad as that is, but it's by definition temporary. If they own it, it will be permanent. It'll be yeshivas keva. What we want to keep it as is yeshivas arai. That is the Rambam's codification of this halacha in the Rambam, in the Gemara. So if we take a step back for a moment, we have the following situation. On the one hand, we have those achronim, those great gedolim, who have purported and supported the heter mechira. A point I should have mentioned before, if it wasn't clear, and this is the segue from last week and the first shir, the predicate of this entire argument is that we are dealing with an iser derabanan. Just to review for a moment, we saw last week that there was a three-way machlokis about the status of Shemitah nowadays, and the majority opinion is that it is obligatory rabbinically, achi of derabanan, but no more, not the oraisa. And those mekilim are pretty explicit that they're willing to be mekil, despite the questions, because we're, quote, only dealing with an iser derabanan. And therefore they have this argument of the heter mechira, you'll sell the land to the non-Jew, he'll have the land, in point of fact, to make it a little bit more of a real sale, they sell it for 2 years, but by so doing, hopefully then the land is owned by a non-Jew, and the prohibition of the Shemitah wouldn't fully attach to that land. The first argument, the first problem with this proposal, as novel and creative and potentially helpful as it is that it may be usur in its own right. Why would this be permissible, one could ask, based on this Gemara and this Rambam? The Gemara is beferish. The Rambam paskins clearly that you're not allowed to sell land to a non-Jew. Doesn't seem to be any qualification. It's usur to sell land to a non-Jew, period. If that's the case, Mali, what's the difference if it's me selling my apartment in Yerushalayim or my farm in the Negev, what Galil, wherever, what's the difference between me selling that to a non-Jew, which is apparently usur from the Gemara, and the rabbis getting together and selling my land or someone else's or many people's land to a non-Jew for Shemitah? L'chora, it seems at first glance that that is a prohibition. Not only is that just something that we should be worried about theoretically, one of the arch opponents of the Heter Mechira was the great Netziv. The Netziv of Valozhin of Talitz Yehuda Berlin wrote passionately against this Heter. And one of, if not the main argument he uses in his arsenal is that it's usur. And therefore, not only is it usur, but take a look at your source. He writes very strongly and somewhat sharply. Ra'isi lagon echad, fourth source on your sheet. Shekosav, liyater se'es, yicholim limkor liyishmel ha'kiro, that if we'll need to, we can sell to this non-Jew, to the heir of the land, to help us in Shemitah. Uba'emes says the Netziv, harav hagon anal, this rabbi, whoever he's specifically alluding to, whichever the Gedolim, and it could have been, as I said, any one of a number, who did support the Heter, catch this line now. This is a zinger, a real zinger, a poetic put-down, if you will. Barach mehazeev upoga boavi. He's running away from the wolf, but he's run in to the ari, to the lion. What does that mean? He wrote sim lehimalait mi iser shviyas bezman hazeh derabonon l'rov haposkin. Why are we doing this heter? Because we can't stand by living the isurim of Shemitah. We need to work the land. We need the produce. But what's that prohibition according to most poskim, as we've mentioned? At worst, an iser derabonon. So to avoid the violation of iser derabonon, what have they done? They've sold the land to a non-Jew. And what does that mean? Upagabo v'iser mechiras karka lavonis galila beretz Yisrael says the Netziv, they are violating lo sechanim, shu iser da'oraisa l'kulei alma. No one argues that lo sechanim is a da'oraisa. So what comes out, says the Netziv? Even if I'm sympathetic with your motive, says the Netziv, but it doesn't matter. It's counterproductive. It's terrible. You're trying to avoid an iser da'rabanan, but in the end, you're violating an iser da'oraisa. You're jumping from the proverbial frying pan into the fire. If you want to do an Averis, doesn't it? Better work on the field on Shemitah. Worst, all you did is Nisr Darabanon. By selling the land before Shemitah, you're violating an Nisr Daraisa. That is a very, very strong argument. And this is the argument which, if we are going to understand those who support that, the Mechira, we'll have to understand how does one answer this apparently very strong and compelling critique and question of the Netziv and others who followed him, who assumed that the whole Heter is usur, doesn't get off the ground, it's effective, not effective. Forget effective, it's usur, you can't do it, period. It's lo sechanim, it's an iser daraisa. What are we talking about? So what I'd like to do with the remainder of the shir is to show three different suggestions as a way of answering or neutralizing this argument. Now, each and every one of the three are debatable. And obviously, the Netziv, among others, will reject these three. But just so we should be aware that this has certainly been thought about and given great care, and there's at least three arguments, some stronger than others, which are used as an attempt to neutralize this critique. Okay, let's see the first one. The first answer that is proposed is mentioned in different forms by different people. Let's start with Rav Kook. If you take a look for a moment, let's skip the next source and go to the bottom of the sheet. Rav Kook, not in his Sefer Shabbat Ha'aretz, but rather in one of his Tshuva Svarim, the Mishpat Kohen, Rav Kook bases his first rationale in defense of Heter Mechira with the comment of the Ran. The Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim, one of the great Rishonim, here is actually not explicitly talking about Shemitah, but he's talking about another related point, or even, I'm sorry, not only not Shemitah, he's not talking about the prohibition of giving land to a non-Jew. Rather, he's talking about doing a gratuitous favor, the matnas chinam version, the third leg of this prohibition. And in that, he's discussing the Gemara that speaks about how in some cases they were going to free a slave, free a non-Jewish slave, so that they could count for a minyan or something like that. When you free a non-Jewish slave, in fact, l'olam v'hem ta'avodu, there's a pasuk that says you're not supposed to free them. If that's the case, then you're in fact violating a prohibition by freeing them. So the Ran asked the question, how does the Gemara in certain cases entertain the possibility that you would free the Eved? Isn't that a prohibition? So the Ran, here I'm just reading you from the quotation of Rav Kook, the Ran says it depends. Why are you freeing that slave? The mutter, in those cases it's permissible, mitayim with the lo sechaneim nesar, davk kshemes kavein litovasam. When is lo sechaneim asar? When you're freeing, you're doing the favor for the non-Jew, for their benefit. If that's the case, if you're freeing the non-Jew, giving them a present for their benefit, that's what's asar. But, if you're doing it for your benefit, says the Ran, it's not a problem. Lachanami lo shayach esed dachaniya v'kaka b'machia kazu. Excuse me, I just read into the Rav Kook, I'm sorry. However, says the Ran, getting back to the Ran, if you're doing it for your benefit, so then there's no prohibition. The whole prohibition is to help them, to ingratiate yourself with them, to do something for their benefit. They'll like you, they'll befriend you, God forbid you could marry them, etc. But if you're only doing it for your benefit, then says the Ran, there's no problem. If you're freeing the non-Jewish slave so you could have a minion, then there's no problem. Says Rav Kook, in light of that, v'hakanami lo shayach iser chaniya b'kaka b'mechirazu, because in our case, therefore, there is no prohibition. Shidar charom alaf kimekdusha sviyas kedesh shiachul la'avod v'heter shiela tovasenu kedesh yischazku yisrael b'karka. Namely, says Rav Kook, the prohibition of lo sechonim will not apply to our heter mechira. After all, why are we selling the land? Are we doing it for this Arab, this non-Jew's benefit? No, we're doing it for our benefit, so we can work on Shemitah. Therefore, says Rav Kook, just like the Ran said, you could free the slave, you could give a matana shel chinam, when we have our own interest, it's enlightened self-interest, quote-unquote, we're doing it for our benefit. So too, says Rav Kook, if we're doing it, if we're selling the land for our benefit, not for theirs, then it would also be permissible. It would also be permissible. This l'cha'ora is a very strong argument. If you take a look at the tshuva above, the Yeshua Smalko, he also uses the same rationale. So you have two of the great gedolim, and Yeshua Smalko is Rav Yeshua Mikutna. If you recall, he is the name of one of the original big three who signed on to the original heter. So you have a very strong argument, number one, to neutralize the Netziv prohibition. Netziv had said that the prohibition of Shemitah, of Lo Sechonim, would totally negate giving and doing anything for the Heter Mechira. After all, it's also to give the land, it's a pasuk, the Gemara, Osite Lem Chaniya Bakarka. Answer number one to that question, or that argument is, from a cook, from the Yeshua Smalko, or Yeshua Mikotna, is number one, not true. Not so simple, Netziv. The Isser is only to do and to give land for their benefit. For our benefit, it is permissible. Furthermore, it's worth noting, both Rav Kook and especially Rav Yeshua Mikutna focus on the fact that we're not just doing this for a private person. You know, I need to do a favor, I need to do a business deal with this non-Jewish guy, so I'll sell him my land for something else. So for that matter, I need money, I need to raise capital, I need liquid assets, and therefore I have a plot of land, and therefore I sell it to the non-Jew. I'm not selling for his benefit, I'm selling for my benefit because I need the money. That, in theory, would already be permissible and based on the rationale of Rav Kook and Yeshua Smalko. But he adds, if you take a look back on that source, the Yeshua Smalko, the third line where it begins to be underlined, he has a slightly different language. He doesn't just say it's better for a person. It's not just an individual who benefits. In this case, quite literally, the entire Jewish establishment. That time, the whole Jewish population in Eretz Yisrael, the whole Yishuv, the whole settlement, needed this. And Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin, the great Mechaber Sfarim, the founding editor of the Encyclopedia Talmudis and one of the most prodigious geniuses of the 20th century, Rav Zevin points out in his Sefer that this is a stronger argument. It's not just an individual. It's the whole tzibur who are dependent upon it. And certainly if that's the case, if the whole purpose is to strengthen the tzibur, so then let's go back to the language of the Rambam. We have it underlined in the Rambam on the third source. What did the Rambam say? That the whole purpose of the prohibition is to make sure that the non-Jews don't get a stronger foothold in the land. We remain yeshivas keva, permanent and strong. They remain to the extent that they have to be there. Yeshivas arai, weak and temporary. Says Rav Zevin, what these achronim are hinting at, Rav Kook says a similar thing, is that usually in the normal, typical situation, what's the best thing for strengthening the Jewish hold on the land? For Jews to own the land. To sell to a non-Jew in almost any circumstance will be hurting our cause and our hold of the land and helping theirs. That's a prohibition, and it's a daraisa, not a small or thing or a laughing matter. However, paradoxically enough, in this case, perhaps it's a unique situation, but in this case, just the opposite is true. If we, especially in those days, don't farm, if we observe Shemitah in the simple sense and don't farm, even if we don't completely die out, there'll be abject poverty, that economy will be ruined and it will not just turn around in a year. That's obvious. In those days, it was certainly true. And therefore, the whole Jewish yeshuv will be fundamentally weakened. So it's almost a sickening paradox, they argue. By us keeping the land, not selling it, we're actually in the long term or the bigger picture hurting our hold on the land. By selling it, then, even though in the short term we're giving it to them, but in the long term, since we know we're going to buy it back from them in a year or two, so in the end of the day, by keeping our economy humming, keeping ourselves above water and not starving and not going into dire poverty, in the big picture, we're actually strengthening the Jewish yeshuv. So that, in sum total, is the first argument. It's technically not a prohibition because we're doing it for our benefit. Furthermore, because we're not just doing it for our individual benefit, but for the collective benefit of the entire yeshuv and the tzibur, it's really in the spirit of the prohibition. In fact, ironically, paradoxically, to sell as opposed to typically not to sell. Now, the truth is that an argument defending the nesiv, if you will, or neutralizing or attacking to countermand this rationale was offered by the Chazon Ish. If you turn your source sheet over, you will see, to the second sheet, you will see the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish says, by the way, I just want those to know I have seen the questions. Let's get through some of these sections, and I will try to answer the questions, especially those that are relevant to the part we have seen till now. But let me just close this particular part of the shir by mentioning the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish makes the following point, which is certainly worth considering. What was the basis of Rav Kook and of the Yeshuas Malko? The basis was the Ran. The Ran had the Chiddush when it came to the Eved, that if you're doing it for your benefit, there is no violation of Lo Sachanim. But let's be careful, and let's think about this carefully for a moment, clearly. What was the Ran talking about? Was he talking about giving land to a non-Jew? The example number one of the prohibition? No, he wasn't talking about that. The Ran was actually talking about example number three of the prohibition, namely the question of doing a favor, matnas chinam. Now, Rav Kook and the Yeshuas Malko simply assumed that if the Ran is correct about one, he's correct about the other. That principle conceptually can be transferred from number three, matana shel chinam, gratuitous gifts, to number one, b'siten lehem chaniyah bakarka, selling land in Eretz Yisrael. However, argues the Chazon Ish, that is a sleight of hand which does not hold up to scrutiny. Take a look inside, says the Chazon Ish, hachal inyan chaniyah bakarka ein chiluk. We can't make the distinction, are we doing it for our benefit or the non-Jews' benefit? By giving a favor, by doing a favor to the non-Jew, complimenting him, those things, the last two of the three, that's much more subjective. It depends on your motivation, on your regesh. Are you doing it to flatter them? Are you doing it to benefit them? Because you're not supposed to benefit them. If that's the case, if you're doing it for your benefit, somewhat cynically, or what we'd call enlightened self-interest. So then, in economy, says the Chazon Ish, I can hear the Ran, I can hear that distinction, I can accept it. But he says it's fundamentally different. Chaniyah bakarka, when it comes to the first and original prohibition of selling land in Eretz Yisrael, hametziyah shel ovdei avodah zarah ba'admas Eretz Yisrael bekinyan sonoy lifnei hamakom. It's a mitzvah. It's a reality. What Hashem doesn't want is a non-Jew, especially an idolater, to have ownership of land in Eretz Yisrael. Period. Who cares why you gave it to them? For your benefit, for his benefit. It's the fact on the ground, it's the fact of the non-Jew owning it, that's the problem. And therefore, whatever the motivation, it says the Chazanish, is irrelevant to the reality of that ownership. So if you accept the Chazanish's redefinition of the prohibition, we can no longer use the Ran as a support, and then the Rit, then Rav Kook and the Yeshuas Malko would fall away. So we'll stop for a moment, let's summarize and see the forest for the trees. Where we are now is that the basis of the Heter is argued to be null and void based on the Netziv, that if you do so, you violate Lo Sachanim. Our first argument to be lenient is that Lo Sachanim only applies when you're doing it, when you're selling the land for the non-Jews' benefit, but here we're quite obviously doing it for our benefit, and therefore it should be permissible. Especially as Rav Kook and Rav Yeshuvi could emphasize, given the fact that it's not just helping an individual and his particular business or economic interests, but rather it's Latovas, the entire Yishuv and Dibor, and giving them a further Chanias Keva, to borrow the Rambam's term. The Chazanish finally argues, in essence, defending the Netziv, attacking, critiquing the Heterim of the Rav Kook and Rav Yeshuvi Kutna, that you can't use that argument, that motivation is irrelevant for this part of the halacha, for selling land. Motivation is only relevant for the halacha of not giving a Jew gratuitous compliments or doing favors or giving them gifts. But the first halacha of giving them land, Chazanish held, is irrelevant for motivation. So that's the argument. Certainly I'm not in a position to definitively paskin it, not with such great gedolim arguing it, but in sum, that is the argument. Argument number one is, do we care about the motivation of the seller? The Mekilin, the lenient argument is that we do care about motivation, so the motivation is for the benefit of the Jews, and therefore it's okay. The Chazanish, presumably the Netziv, argue that it's irrelevant, we don't care about motivation, we only care about facts. Are you selling or are you not? Ad kan, point number one, in defense of the Heter, why Lo Sachanim would not apply. In terms of some of the questions that I see here that were printed, some of them are more general and not particular to what we just mentioned. One of the questions was whether Yevul Nachri is in the spirit of Lo Sachanim. I'm not exactly sure what you mean. Do you mean that if we have produce, Yevul Nachri, produce that's grown by a non-Jew, if we buy it, is that part of Lo Sachanim? Is that the question? I'm not sure what that question is. And the second point, if we buy produce from them, we will build up their farms. I must say, David, that I completely agree with you. Completely agree with you. And therefore, the contemporary practice in some circles who don't rely on the Heter Mechira, and the Heter Mechira allows the land in the long term to be still managed by the Jew, or at least get money for it, etc. But for those who don't rely on the Heter, what they do is they buy just non-Jewishly owned produce, some in Gaza, some in Egypt or other places, and those who are buying from them and living in Eretz Yisrael, it's certainly helping our enemies in a way that certainly violates the spirit of Lo Sachanim, in my opinion. That's a very, very good question. In terms of the question of whether we're supposed to trust in Hashem, that is the ultimate meta question which underlies the entire critique of the Heter Mechira. The biggest philosophical critique of Heter Mechira is, how could you say we need to sell this because we need parnasa? We should just trust Hashem. The Pesukim and the Chumash explicitly promise us a bounty if we will keep the laws of Shemitah. And that was very much an emotional argument that was used against the Heter. In short, the best argument against that is that there are those who held that those brachos are limited to when Shemitah is the Oraisa. Therefore, that is why, as I mentioned, the Mekilim limited their Heter and their Kula to the assumption that Shemitah was only Derabbanon, and Rav Kook, and I believe others, said when it's only Derabbanon, we can't assume that the Torah's promises of Bracha and salvation will apply as well. So, given that, that's why they technically felt it was not a violation. However, it is still not keeping with the spirit. And again, that's not me talking, that's Rav Kook himself talking, who made it clear that it's very bidyavid, and he'd much rather keep with the spirit of the halacha, which is certainly to try to foster bitachon, hopefully the brachos that come with bitachon, but certainly trusting in Hashem. So that is certainly a valid argument, which Rav Kook technically defended himself against, but even he admitted was one which he wishes he didn't have to support. Okay. The question about the Chazon Ish and the produce becoming usher is something which we'll see, I don't think this week, but we will see next week. But that is a good question. I see you're familiar with some of the topics. Hopefully this series will make you even more familiar, and what I'm trying to do is be systematic and divide and separate the issues so that we have a clear understanding of them all. So right now we're still focusing on the question of Lo Sechane. Just a simple question. Is it usher or not to sell the land? The Netziv said yes. Argument number one that it should be permissible is because we care about motivation. Our motivation is for our benefit, not for theirs. Argument number two for why this should be permissible goes back to the Rambam. Turning over the page to the first page, the Rambam has said again, as we've seen it, the Rambam added, this is not in the Gemara, but the Rambam editorialized, and he added that the purpose of this halacha was so that shelo yehelehem karka, shim lo yehelehem karka, excuse me, if they don't have ownership, yeshivas on yeshivas arayhi. We want them to have only temporary or weaker ownership in the land of Israel, not permanent or stronger ownership. In light of this, a second argument which is mentioned is argued by, among others, the Yeshuas Malko. Take a look again at Rav Shmuel Mikutno, the source on the first sheet. Here I'm reading from the third line. After the comma, he says, another reason to be lenient, Bifrat, in particular, Kishenochra Manas Lahasir. In this case, we're not selling it permanently to give them a yeshivas keva. Even the sale is yeshivas arai, because it's being done on Manas Lahasir. You make it conditional with the non-Jew that he's going to sell back to you, whether it's after Shemitah or in 2 years, but be that as it may, you know he's going to sell back to you. So if that's the case, it should be permissible, and it should not be a problem, because it does not violate the Rambam's definition of the halacha, that it's not just a formal technical halacha, don't sell, rather it's a broader issue, a deeper issue of don't give them a foothold in the land. But if all I'm giving them is a temporary deed, a temporary ownership, while the ownership may work while it's effective, but I know that its effective is limited. The time is running out from the moment it starts until the moment it ends. And therefore, the Yeshua Smalku and others argued that that should therefore be permissible. Furthermore, if you now turn back to the second sheet, take a look at the third source on the sheet, the Sefer L'Or Halacha. That is a Sefer of Halachic essays written by Rav Zevin. I mentioned him before. And in this piece, he quotes the Tshuva Sefer, which I cannot get my hands on a primary copy of, so I give you his citation of it, called the Shut Shemin HaMa'or. Shemin HaMa'or, I believe, was a Sephardic Rav, and he was a Rav in Hebron, Ir HaKodesh Hebron. He was asked the following Shaila, not about Hetzer Mechira in this political football sense, but just a simple case, a simple individual farmer who was living in Hebron at a time where who knows if there was a minion in Hebron, but there was a Jewish farmer in Hebron. He had a vineyard. And he asked his local Rav, this Baal Tshuva Shemin HaMa'or Shaila, is he allowed to do this or not? Can he sell in his temporary Amanas L'Hasir way, can he sell his vineyard to his non-Jewish neighbor for the year? And as Rav Zevin quotes him, Dan HaMachaber Rav Rosh Yeshiva Mechabron, this author of the Shemin HaMa'or discussed it, Al Ish Yisrael, about the case of the Jew, Shaila Kerem Mechabron, he had a vineyard in Mechabron, the person asked the Rav, what should he do? How should he get out of Shemitah? He can't survive if he doesn't farm. He goes back and forth. He has a big discourse. But he says, you could sell it to the non-Jew as a karka. You could sell it and the trees and the whole vineyard. You could sell it for 2 years. Again, the point is, only 2 years, because it's temporary, therefore it's not a violation of Lo Sechanim. This argument that we saw echoed by the Yeshuas Malko, that temporary is not a violation, that only permanent is a violation, we are told by testimony, as Rav Zevin quotes, Ha'aderes Mosar Al-Psak Shel Ha'Grai Mikotna, that the Aderes, that's Rav Kook's father-in-law, great God in his own right, that he told over, that he was there with the Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan Spector. The Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan Spector signed off on the Heter, and that the strongest argument that persuaded Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan that this should be permissible, Shekol Ikra Hara'aso Smach Al HaShemin HaMa'or. that ultimately, even though you or I may not have heard of him, apparently Rav Yitzchak Elchanan was impressed enough with the person and the svara, the rationale of this tshuva from Chevron, and Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector used that as his primary basis for being lenient and allowing the Heter Mechira going back to the original one in 1889. So we see, again, whether it's Rishuot Mikutna, or in this case we see Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, we see a second argument against the Netziv, against the assumption that there should be a prohibition of Lo Sachanim by invoking the Heter Mechira. Why? What is the second answer? The second answer is because we assume, according to these lenient arguments, that it should be permissible because it's only temporary. The prohibition of Lositim Lamchaniya Bakarka, as understood by the Rambam, is we shouldn't give him a foothold in the land. If we don't give him to have a permanent foothold, if it's only temporary, then they argue, the argument goes, it's not a problem. The truth is that you could debate this. Of course this is debatable, and in fact, if you take a look at the next source, it's a one-liner, the Minchas Chinuch raises the question well before this discussion occurred. Practically, in more theoretical terms, the Minchas Chinuch asked the question, when it comes to the prohibition of Lo Sachanim, Tzarachin, he wonders, B'mocher Lizman, if I only sell it for a temporary time period, whether it's 1, 2, or 10 years, but it's not a permanent sale, he's not sure, should it work or not? Now, as it happens, Minchas Chinuch concludes in Paskins that he thinks even a temporary sale would be a problem. But it's worth noting that the Minchas Chinuch does not quote anything about Lo Sachanim itself. Rather, the source he quotes is the Rambam in Hilchos Mechira, which is just a general comment that the Rambam makes in the realm of real estate or commercial law, that a temporary sale, even though it's temporary and the time limit is built into the sale, but for the duration, the Rambam holds, and this is how we paskin, it is considered a valid commercial transaction. So the Minchas Chinuch says if it's a valid commercial transaction, it should be a violation of Lo Sachanim. Perhaps that's what the Netziv felt as well. However, again, just to repeat, the Mekilim, I think, would not be bothered by that Rambam because they would be working with a different Rambam and, frankly, a more relevant Rambam, the Rambam that explicitly discusses Lo Sachanim. And there, the Rambam himself seems to be arguing, yes, it's true that technically, from a commercial halachic perspective, the land has been sold. Fine. But just because the land is sold doesn't mean you violated Lo Sachanim. Lo Sachanim is not just a question of is it a commercial transaction or not. Yes, it's a commercial transaction. But the question is, or the point is, according to the Rambam and those who understand the Rambam this way, even though it's a commercial transaction, even though the guy now owns the land, is that a violation of the Isser V'Heter? Is that a violation of Yoredeya? Yes, in Chosh and Mishpat the sale works, but in Yoredeya, is that a violation of Lo Sachanim? So that's not just a question of whether it's a valid sale or not, apparently according to the Rambam, as understood by Rav Yitzchak Elchanan and by the Shemin Amor and by the Shulam Kutna. That's a question of whether I'm giving them a permanent foothold in the land. If I'm giving them a permanent foothold in the land by giving them a permanent ownership, so then in Hanami, that is a violation. But if I'm only giving them a 2-year temporary sale, even though technically from a commercial perspective the sale works, but from a Hilchos Shemitah, a Hilchos Lo Sachanim perspective, it would not be a violation. So that is the second argument, to say that it should be permissible because it's only a temporary sale, and again, against that is the Minchas Chinuch. So until now, we've seen two arguments to defend the Heter Mechira against the charge that it's usher, that it's in a violation of Lo Sachanim. Number one, we're doing it for our benefit, and then number two, we saw we're doing it only temporarily and not permanently. A third argument that is proposed in defense of the Heter Mechira is mentioned by Rav Kook. This, I would say, with all due respect, is perhaps the weakest of the arguments, but Rav Kook himself adds, and this is now from his Sefer Shabbat Ha'aretz in the introduction, 12th chapter, Yesh Lomar, you see on the source sheet in the middle, the Begoy Shabbalav Hachi Yesh Lo Chaniya Bakarka. If the non-Jew in question already owns land in Eretz Yisrael, he already has Chaniya Bakarka, he already owns land, Ein HaTosefes Mashmosifan Aleha Ata Asura Min HaTorah. By giving him extra land, you are not in any way adding to the violation. It's an all-or-nothing thing, says Rav Kook. If he doesn't have any land, don't give him any. But once he has some land, it doesn't matter that you're giving him any more. And therefore, says Rav Kook, as long as he already owns land, there's no violation of the Isser D'Oraisa. Now, I think the obvious vulnerability to this argument, the reason that I said before that I think on some level it's the weakest argument is the question and the counterpoint made explicitly by the Chazal Ish in his next source, where he points out, I think what's intuitive, the kol bayis v'sada, every bit of land, every property, every real estate plot, shamos are land that you give to them, that you sell to them, haru nosech haniyav karka. Right? It's not all or nothing. There's incremental strength. The more you have, the more strong you are, the more viable you are. It seems very intuitive. To me, it's a little bit of a stretch that Rav Kook is making. And I think, personally, I'd be partial to Chazon Ish's counter-argument. But be that as it may, that would be, in theory, if we accept Rav Kook, a third argument in defense of the Heter, namely that given the fact that we would choose, and in fact, deliberately, doesn't take much effort, deliberately, the Rabbanut will choose a non-Jew who already owns land in Israel, so who's living in his own house in the biblical land of Israel. So in that case, according to Rav Kook, you would have a third reason to be lenient, because since he already has his ownership, he already has his chaniyah bakarka, we are not adding to the violation by giving him more deeds and allowing him to buy more land. Finally, to conclude, one of the most important but debated of the arguments is the one that is mentioned again by Rav Kook and others, and that has to do with who we're selling the land to, or who generally the prohibition of Lo Sechanim applies to. If you take a look at Rav Kook in Tshuva, he says to him, it's a davar pashut, he thinks it is clear that in this case it should be permissible. Why? Because who are we selling it to? We're selling it to an Arab or a Muslim. In the second line, where it's underlined, the lismoch del yishme'elim she'enim obdei avodah zarah, ein v'hem iser shal chaniyah bakarka. Says Rav Kook, the whole problem doesn't get off the ground. There is no prohibition to begin with. Forget everything we've said for the last 55 minutes. There is no prohibition, says Rav Kook. Why? Because we're selling it to a non-Jew who is a monotheist, a Muslim, who is not an Oved Avodah Zarah, according to the Rambam. If that's the case, says Rav Kook, the whole incident, the whole prohibition, if you look in the Gemara, if you look in the Rambam, the assumption of the whole prohibition is that it was that you can't sell to an Oved Avodah Zarah. So simple, we find an Arab, we sell it to them, and showing that's it. That takes care of the whole problem. It doesn't matter if he owns land or not. It doesn't matter if you would sell to him forever. Even if you would sell land to an Arab forever, says Rav Kook, it's not a prohibition of Lo Sechanim, because you are not violating it unless you sell it to an Oved Avodah Zarah. And he points out that in this case, for these halachos, Yishmeilim Einim Avodah Zarah. We don't consider an Arab or an Islam, someone who's Islamic, we don't consider Islam Avodah Zarah. And in that sense, Dinam Kedar Toshav, they're no worse than a Ged Toshav, who you are allowed to sell land to. Umote Lite Lehem Chaniya Bekarka. And in fact, he adds, just as an interesting side note, that he thinks that that's why in earlier generations this heter was never suggested. After all, if the reason is because in the time of the Gemara, who was living in Israel? Christians. So when it was the Christians in the time of Chazal, Taka, there of the Avodah Zarah, it seems, and that's why it was prohibited. So to sell it to them would be prohibited, Taka. That's why no one had this idea in earlier generations. But now that it's after the Crusades, etc., or excuse me, not after the Crusades, that was historically accurate. But given the historical reality of the 19th and 20th century, where it's Arabs that we can sell it to with no problem, no shortage of Arabs and Islams in the area. So if that's the case, no problem, says Rav Kook, technically we are allowed to sell it to them. Now the truth is that then what this will conclude, and before I try to answer any last questions, one of the proofs that Rav Kook or others mention is from the comment of the Bach. I'll give you introduction. I don't have the tour on the page, there wasn't enough room, but the tour, one of the great codifiers of Halacha, when he quotes this, says explicitly, don't sell land l'Ovdei Avodah Zarah, as we've been implying. That the halacha is not to sell to an Oved Avodah Zarah. So if you take a look at the Bach, he quotes that the Beis Yosef does not make such a big deal, or at least does not make the same inference that we've been making. The Beis Yosef says, la bla fuki yishmeilim, that he wasn't coming to exclude or permit sale to a Muslim. Rather, la fuki ger toshav. He just meant that to sell to a ger toshav, a non-Jew who accepts the Shevitz of the name Noach and accepts Jewish sovereignty over the land of Israel, for him you could sell. But an Arab who may not accept those halachos or still doesn't accept our right to Israel, that you can't sell to. That was the Beit Yosef. Okay, the Beit Yosef is not going to be helpful here for the Heter. But the Bach continues and rejects this. Well, the Feed of Arav, the Bach says, no. Kasha lama l'Rabbeinu l'Ovdei Avodah Zarah. He says the truest and simplest reading of the Torah, who goes out of his way to say don't sell to an idolatrous person, is that he's coming to include, or should I say exclude, selling it to an Arab who is monotheistic, not a Avodah Zarah. After all, according to the Beit Yosef, it's confusing. According to the Beit Yosef, the Torah wrote was clumsy, because certainly the average person would make the inference that a Muslim would be permissible because he's not a Avodah Zarah. According to the Beit Yosef, that's not true. But according to the Beit Yosef, why did the Torah write such a confusing language? Rather, says the Bach, So they go back and forth. Maybe there's other reasons to put it in censors, this, that, and the other. The bottom line is that the Bach is quoted by many as saying explicitly what we inferred, that it should be permissible to sell the land to an Arab, to someone who is Muslim, because they're not Ovdei Avodah Zarah. I'll just mention in closing that Rav David Cohn, the great postdoc from Flatbush, from Brooklyn, he has a one-page article which was published in the Mariah Journal. And in fact, not long ago I had occasion to be speaking with Rav David Cohn in person, and I brought up his article and we discussed it back and forth. But suffice it to say, with great scholarship, he investigated old manuscripts of the Torah and of the Bach from very early versions and printings, not the version that we have in our standard editions. And he claims, as alluded to here in that parenthesis, that really the Torah did not have anything so profound in mind. The Bach did not have anything profound in mind. It really is censorship, and that in fact it was just a politically correct, cleaned up word formulation. But that really all Goyim are included in the prohibition, all non-Jews, and has nothing to do with Avodah Zarah versus non-Avodah Zarah. Bottom line is, whether that's the correct text of the Bach or not, certainly the Netziv and others who argue against the Heter because of the prohibition of Losachanim, clearly they held that selling to an Arab, to a Muslim, is not beneficial because they felt that the Isser is still on hold. So to summarize, before I answer any last questions, basically what we have is one major question. Is the Heter Usser, is it a violation of Los Sachanim? The Gemara says you can't sell land to a non-Jew in Israel. And we have four potential arguments to neutralize that prohibition. Number one is we're doing it for our benefit. Number two is we're doing it temporarily. Number three, we sell to someone who already owns land in Israel. And number four, of Cook's final argument, and others agree with him, that there's no prohibition if you sell to a non-idolater, if you sell to a Muslim. If you accept any one of these four reasons, you've neutralized the Netziv's argument, Baruch Mizaev, right, that he said you were running away from the bear, Upaga Ba'ari, that we got ourselves from the frying pan into the fire. If you accept any one of these four arguments, you would not have a problem. It would be permissible because of the fact that these arguments would neutralize the prohibition of Lo Sechanim. If you reject all four of these or any other theoretical arguments, then you'll be left with the Netziv, which is that the Heter Mechira doesn't get off the ground because it is prohibited. So obviously the Rabbanut, the Rabbanim are not going to start violating Yisurim. Certainly we wouldn't violate one Yisur to help another, and we certainly wouldn't violate Yisur Daraisa to save us from Yisur Darabanan. If he's right about the facts, then the Netziv is certainly right about the conclusion. It's clear that those who supported the Heter 100 years ago, and certainly those who theoretically still defend the Heter, obviously they are rejecting the Netziv. That they hold that it is not usur, it is not a violation of Lo Sechanim. Why is it not a violation? It could be for any one of or a multiple of these four arguments. But again, I want to stress, even if one or two or even three of the arguments are debatable or not compelling, still, all you need is one. If any one of these four arguments would be accepted, then the Netziv's question goes away. Lo Sechanim is not a prohibition. And then we are at least through step one. We'll need to do a hop, skip, and a jump to conclude that the Heter is affected. But at least we have cleared the first hurdle. We've done the hop part. If we assume that Lo Sechanim is not a problem, then that means we're assuming that at least in theory, the Heter has legs, it has life, because it is at least permissible. What I hope to begin Yom Tov Hashem discussing next week is if Naniach, again, if assuming it's permissible, which we are going to work with based on tonight's share for any one of the four reasons, if it's permissible, if I admit it's only a question, then it's if the Chazon Ish, others hold it's usher. But if we are accept any one of these four reasons and assume that it's permissible, the next question is, okay, in theory it's not a prohibition, but am I doing anything for real, or isn't this just a joke? After all, who are you kidding? One Arab is buying 100 farms, 200 farms. Why? Because I sell a deed, he gives me some money. Come on, is that a real serious sale? So whether this sale works, is it effective from a Chosh and Mishra perspective? Does the non-Jew really take legitimate ownership of the land, even if it's permissible to sell it to him? But does it work? Are we dealing with a joke or something real and bona fide? Emirat Hashem, that's what we will pick up with next week. I have one final question that I see that's relevant, the last one that was typed in here, which is whether we are allowed to sell to our enemies. And the answer is anachanami. That is, again, one of the reasons why this is a bitter pill to swallow. But the fact that we're only doing it temporarily, the fact that it's on paper and that we know we're getting it back in 2 years and that we are still working and controlling that land because that's the deal we made with them. So given that fact, I guess it would be, again, at least in their argument, not a technical violation of Lo Sechonim. Is it a harder pill to swallow? Yes. But technically they hold that would not be a problem. The last question was asked was, could you sell Midoraisa to a Noachide? Do you mean a Noachide who is Ovid of Arzara, or a Ger Toshav, someone who has accepted the Shev Mitzvah? If you mean a Ger Toshav, then the answer is yes, it is permissible. In fact, Rav Kook said that in this perspective, any non-idolater, anyone who is not an Ovid of Arzara, is tantamount to a Ger Toshav. Of course, he is not a Ger Toshav, not even figuratively, because he may not accept all the tenants to be a Ger Toshav. But according to Rav Kook, as long as he's not an Ovid of Arzara, an Ovid of Arzara, it is okay. Unless there are any other questions, we'll sign off for now. I thank all of you who listened. Feel free to email me if you have further questions. And Emirta Hashem, we will pick up with this second part next week. Yashar Koach to all of you. I enjoyed giving the shir. I hope you enjoyed listening.
Next year.